Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with CropLife Europe. Now, we've spoken on this podcast about sustainability in the food sector before, from manufacturing practices to food waste, and of course, meat and dairy alternatives. But in this episode, we're going to focus on agriculture. There's no getting away from the fact that farmers are under increasing pressure to feed a growing population, and doing so in a sustainable way adds another layer of complexity. In Europe, the challenge has been set. The European Commission's Farm to Fork strategy, a central part of the European Green Deal, calls for a major reduction in the use of chemical pesticides while making sure the supermarket shelves remain fully stocked. So what are the challenges in meeting these goals? What, if anything, needs to change to make them more achievable? And what are some of these solutions being proposed? I'm delighted to be joined by Olivier De Matos, Director General at CropLife Europe, an organisation which represents the crop protection sector in Europe. Welcome to the podcast, Olivier.
Thanks, Anthony, for the invitation. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you on. And I think this is a really fascinating topic. I wonder if a good place to start, though, is a bit of an introduction to CropLife Europe. Can you tell us who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah, as you said, we are the European organization that represents the crop protection sector. And we champion advocate for sustainable, innovative and science-based crop protection solutions. And as such, our members are driven by innovation. They are global companies and also small and medium-sized enterprises and national associations that are operating in conventional pesticides, biopesticides, plant biotechnology, and digital and precision agriculture. And one of the things that I would like to highlight here is that we embrace the ambitions of the Green Deal and the Farm to Fork strategy that you mentioned. And as such, we believe Europe's farmers must have access to a full toolbox of innovative crop protection solutions to maintain their production, to also maintain their production model, and as they transition to a more resilient and sustainable farming system.
Okay, when people hear pesticides or terms like crop protection, often it conjures up quite a reaction from people, doesn't it?
Indeed, yeah. And for me, when we talk about pesticides or biopesticides, we need to understand the role they play and why they are used. Just a quick question. Did you know that 40% of yields are lost annually due to pests and diseases?
Ah, I didn't.
And this would double with climate change and if we don't have the solutions available to farmers. And you know that's why we believe that they play an essential role when it comes to protecting food from pests and diseases. And in that sense, our sector strives to provide the best solutions possible and ones that have the best environmentally friendly profile, but do the job right when it comes to keeping pests and diseases at bay.
And I think you sort of answered my next question, which is, I suppose, a pretty key question is, do pesticides have any place in a sustainable agricultural sector? And I guess you're saying they do.
Absolutely, yes. They basically have a place in sustainable agriculture, and they remain one of the most effective solutions for protecting crops in the field. It doesn't mean that it is the only solution for farmers. Just like any sector, ours have evolved and continues to supply farmers with different solutions. The famous toolbox I mentioned, and that basically is making sure for us, we want to make sure that this whole toolbox of solutions is made available so that farmers can produce enough food in a sustainable way.
Okay. I mentioned in the introduction the European Union's Green Deal and its Farm to Fork strategy. Can you give us a bit more on that? Can you introduce us to it for anyone who's not aware of what it's about?
Sure. So the EU introduced the Farm to Fork strategy in 2020. And the objective was to improve sustainable food production and consumption patterns. What underpins basically the Farm to Fork strategy is its ambition to fight climate change and also to reduce greenhouse emissions. And as a sector that supports food production, we believe it's a key strategy. It's an important one. And as such, we also believe that innovation and technological advancement can help achieving the goals. You know, I would like to repeat myself in the sense that agriculture must embrace all innovative technologies to address the challenges that we are facing now, which are making healthy diets more affordable, ensuring better livelihoods for farmers, and improving environmental sustainability. And our future depends on it. So we, you know, just to take an example on innovation, digital and precision agriculture, the tools that are used in the digital and precision agriculture can help farmers in using the optimum amount of water. It can help also them using pesticides or biopesticides in a more targeted way, only when it's needed, basically. So these are the things that have to be taken into account in the context of the strategy. And this is what we are calling for, more access to innovation.
Okay. And the agricultural industry throughout history has been good at innovating and adopting new technologies, hasn't it?
Yes, indeed. We have, you know, the toolbox is a reflection actually of this, of the innovation. And this is why CropLife Europe since 2021 is advocating for that toolbox. You know, I was mentioning innovation and I was making that point about sort of the access to innovation. It's something that for us is crucial. We won't make it if we don't have innovation available and if we don't have a regulatory framework that supports the innovation and above all that supports quick access to innovation. And across the board, I mean, innovation covers all the aspects of the solutions that are part of the toolbox.
Let's get into a bit of the detail then around the Green Deal and how you think some of those targets can be achieved. And can we start by talking about biopesticides? And maybe you could introduce biopesticides to some of our listeners as well.
Yeah, biopesticides is the flavor of the month, actually. everybody talks about it, and we have actually several terminologies that are used. We talk about biopesticides, biologicals, biocontrol solutions. It's, you know, a lot of definitions, basically, but I'm going to use biopesticides as a terminology. And, you know, basically scientists look at microbes, bacteria, fungi, and because they, you know, they possess great qualities for crop protection. And by looking at what exists in nature and by investing time and resources in R&D, we are in a position to create innovative products from these natural substances. And we also know that there is a growing societal demand for sustainable agriculture and food production. And biopesticides in that respect offer promising alternatives to conventional pesticides. So by conventional pesticides, I mean like sort of the chemical, chemical pesticides, as they were. Just one quick question to you. Have you heard of pheromones?
Yes, I've heard of pheromones. I suppose usually associated with animals, I guess, and maybe reproduction.
have you heard about the use of pheromones in agriculture?
So no, personally, I haven't. No, not in agriculture, no.
So just very briefly, it's a fascinating example of what biopesticides can do. So pheromones, I mean, farmers release synthetic pheromones which overpower pheromones produced by female moths to attract males, right? And the synthetic pheromones are released in such quantities that the male's moth can't find the females, and it prevents them from mating and giving rise to the next generation of pests. And we know that it has been a very successful tool that has been used in vineyards and orchards, for example. And this is like sort of a very tiny example of what biopesticides can do. And, you know, we would have never imagined actually that sexual confusion can help make wine.
Yeah. But that's fascinating, isn't it? So that's a whole different way of looking at pest control that isn't the traditional way of doing it. It's actually completely and very scientific. And so is that being used to people? Is that already available to farmers?
It's being used, and we have cases. Yes, of that's why I mean, you know, we have this, I was using this example. One of the things is that, you know, we have more innovation, we have more solutions in the biopesticides, let's say, package that are available. The thing is that availability of this solution takes time, and the process to make them on the market is actually still very slow. So it takes too much time yet to get these solutions on the market. And this is one of the things that we are sort of advocating for, a quicker access to that kind of innovation so that farmers can basically have, you know, a wider panel of solutions to support their production.
So, well, my next question is, how effective are biopesticides in terms of protecting crops and the environment? I mean, the example you've given there, clearly that's very effective. And so as an overall, if we're looking at biopesticides as a whole, are they as effective as traditional pesticides?
Let me start by saying that, you know, we shouldn't see this as a sort of pesticides versus biopesticides.
Okay.
These are complementary tools. That's why we're talking about a toolbox. All go together. So it's, you know, it's up to the farmer to take a decision when sort of preparing the campaign to actually assess the possible challenges that he or she is going to face, and then say, okay, for that problem, I will have that solution. For that problem, I will have that solution, and so on and so on. So by using natural ingredients, we can develop biopesticides that have low level of toxins and residues and are easily broken down. The biopesticides also target specific pests, weeds, and diseases, and they reduce the need, in some cases, for broad-spectrum conventional pesticides. So this means that they have a great potential to be environmentally friendly. But we have also to be careful, as I said, in the versus, in assuming that all natural origins products are safe or safer. Harmful substances also exist in nature, and toxins and viruses, for example, are both natural. So it's really not about pesticides or conventional pesticides versus biopesticides. There are crops that would require pesticide applications for which there is no biopesticide equivalent, or vice versa. So it's literally about complementarity of solutions.
Okay. What are some of the challenges? You've touched on this already, but maybe you could delve a little bit deeper into that. And some of the challenges about getting these products onto our farms.
So, yeah, as I said, I mean, some of the newer types of biopesticides face regulatory hurdles. I mean, it's a classic situation where, you know, innovation outpaces the regulatory processes to approve them. Today, we have, biopesticides that are facing regulatory challenges in the EU. Simply because, you know, there is a lack of adaptive requirements or standardization in testing methods that delay their approval and placing into the market. There is also something else in terms of, the availability of the knowledge. It's new, and we still have to build basically the knowledge around this and the expertise also. So sometimes experts or scientists people working for ministries and for the agencies that are in charge of the assessment do not necessarily have the full understanding and the full background to, you know, make a speedy assessment of these new technologies. So these are part of the hurdles that that we're facing today in getting these products onto the farms.
Great. I don't know if this is an area that you'd like to answer, but I'm just wondering if, so we do some career stuff with this podcast, and one of the big challenges for the food industry is getting people into the food industry to work. And I just wonder if around that area, is there the interest? Are the students sort of coming out of the university, we're just waiting for them to sort of mature into these positions as regulators? Is it an area people are interested in?
Yes. I mean, I think overall, we're talking about the interest in the toolbox, right? And biopesticides as such are part of the toolbox, and they raise interest. I think overall, there is a need also to get a better understanding of how innovation can support the transition. And this is basically what I would expect from universities and agronomy professionals to look at innovation, to look at how innovation, how the toolbox can impact positively the transition of agriculture. That's fundamental. So, you know, I have a hope on this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and we've set out some of the challenges that the food industry is facing or that the agriculture is facing. So it's obviously a really important area. Okay, in terms of technology then, so there have been huge changes across the global economy thanks to digital advances and more seemingly on the horizon. We're looking at AI at the moment. It's everywhere. You know, everyone's talking about AI. And I just wonder how that relates to what we're talking about and the agricultural sector as a whole.
Now, yeah, indeed. I mean, I've been attending a few events on AI, and it's fascinating what we, you know, what we can see, and that, you know, all the tools that are being developed on this. Perhaps the easiest way to understand digital and precision agriculture is to think of it as everything that makes the practice of farming more accurate and controlled when it comes to the growing of crops and raising livestock. I'm going to focus on crops.
Okay.
And, you know, if you have been in a tractor or a sprayer of a farmer, you might think actually that you are in a space station. There are screens everywhere. They talk about GPS and you have like, you know, the machine moves on its own sometimes, like in some cases. So you have, you know, farmers that are sort of looking at screens that show them graphs, maps. And there are a lot of things that are, you know, showing that you know, on the machine side, for example, there's been a lot of innovation and a lot of advance in technology. And an area that is of particular interest to us is, for instance, the images from satellites and drones, which provide information on the health of the plants in the field. So we have, for example, healthy plants which have a higher biomass content that can be shown in a screen in green color, while the plants that are impacted by the pests or the diseases can be shown in yellow or red, and hence alerting the farmer that action has to be taken. So this is an example. But in addition to the satellite and the drones, we have also sensors on these famous, you know, space tractors, harvesters and other connected devices that provide information on the soil type and condition, as well as the water and the nutrient availability. All this information, all this data that is provided to the farmers can be very helpful for them to adapt and optimize the inputs, the costs, and above all, actually, to make a better use of the resources that are available. Often we talk about soil health, for example, or the use of water, and all these technologies do help them optimizing the way they do the farming. And it's very, it's fascinating actually how people sometimes have this thinking of, you know, the old fashioned way of producing food and like sort of the farmer with, you know, the hat and the cigarette in the mouth and just like looking at the field and so on. It's not at all like this any longer. More and more, we have this technology that is on the farm, that is on the fields, that supports the farmers, and they get to know about it, they get to use it, and it's really interesting and fascinating for them.
Yeah, it's interesting that the image that you say that people have in their minds of farming, we've sort of romanticized it, haven't we? And we think that's how it is. So how does that relate to making farming more sustainable then? I'm guessing that they can make better decisions and with that level of monitoring, you can behave in a more sustainable way.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, we have data that is available. I mean, we have a foresight report that was done by the European Parliament that basically tells us that thanks to precision agriculture techniques, we can see a reduction in pesticide use of up to 20-30% and a reduction of sprayed area between 50-80%, which is quite big. Farmers use the products in a much targeted way, as I said. So that means less fuel, less water being used, and practices actually that become more and more sustainable. So, and this is basically what we are aiming at. You know, when we look at the Farm to Fork strategy and the Green Deal, this is part of the objectives that we have.
Yeah. And I guess that will only increase as well. That will only improve as time goes on, the technology gets better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, AI will be very important in that respect. You know, you're going to have tools that will be learning on their own, will be collecting all the data, will be learning from that data and proposing solutions that will be every time will be actually better and better. At least, I mean, that's the objective.
Yeah, that's the home. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about plant biotechnology. So earlier this year, the government in the UK passed a law allowing for gene-edited crops to be grown commercially in England. And I just wonder where the EU is up to with that. Is the EU slightly behind England at the moment? Where are we up to?
Yeah. We are in the first reading stage of the new proposal on new genomic techniques. The proposal has been made by the European Commission. So perhaps we're a bit behind, but I would say that it's not about keeping score. No. The most important is that we have a new regulation and that actually we have an adoption of a new regulation fast. Because again, I mean, this is a technology that is extremely promising.
And so why is it such an important area of focus for the agricultural sector then?
Simply because they complement traditional plant breeding methods to speed up the development of resilient plant varieties. And it essentially can help creating plants with better genetics. They are better adapted to the effects of climate change or better protected against pests and diseases while ensuring food and nutritional security and also increasing sustainability. So, as I said, we need all the innovative technologies to help us in facing all the challenges that we have ahead. And NGTs, as we call them, are part of the solution.
Sure. And I think with the law in England is that, you know, it's not to do anything that wouldn't happen naturally. It's just to speed it up. That's how it's been sort of pitched anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a technology that is literally aiming at speeding the development and also the resilience of the plant. And as I said, making better genetics. So it's all about that. I mean, and this is a technique actually that has been existing for a long, long time. A lot of farmers have been implementing it. I've seen actually no data than a couple of weeks ago. I was in Portugal and I see that with my cousin using it in some of the things. He's a farmer and using it in some of the things that he's producing. And that is really, you know, really interesting to see that and to see how it works.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so what changes would you like to see happen either at a state or EU level that you think will have the biggest impact on sustainable farming across Europe?
I would really like to see the appreciation of farmers for the work they do and for the efforts that they are making every day to give us the food that we have on our plates. The challenges that they are facing with, you know, the climate change, the weather conditions that are changing, the increased pest pressure, the changing regulatory environment as well. It's a tough job. They have basically to adapt on a regular basis. Every year is different. Every year they have something that they have to deal with, to address, because they are very much depending on the climate and on the pests that come up and pop up, and we have more and more of these. And I saw somewhere online a quote that said, once in your life, you may need a doctor, a lawyer, a police officer, and a preacher, but every day, three times a day, you need a farmer. And this is a reality. I mean, we all depend on their everyday effort. And I mean, that's quite personal, a personal comment on this, but it's something that I've noticed. And sometimes, actually often, the efforts that farmers do and the role that they have is not appreciated to their sort of the reality or sort of as it should be. And sometimes it's a bit like sort of, you know, a bit sad actually to see that. So that's a very personal note. And, you know, I'm passionate about the sector, about my job in food production and food in general. I think it should be a higher priority on the political agenda. I heard it will be, so I hope that this is going to be translated into acts. But the other thing is that the second thought I would like to share is, you know, it's making sure or calling policymakers and regulators to embrace innovation and technology. I've witnessed support in many other sectors like energy, and we need to see that in food production. We have so much technology, so much innovation that is available. Digital and precision agriculture, newest generation of pesticides, biopesticides, NGTs, and all the technological advancements that we need in order to feed a growing population and safeguard our environment at the same time. So innovation holds many of the answers to our current challenges in agriculture. And we need to let innovation help us in achieving the ambitions that we have.
Fantastic. Okay, final question then from me. After all we've spoken about in this conversation, how confident are you that the sustainability targets we have spoken about can be achieved?
I will start by saying that we don't have a choice and we must meet our climate objectives. You know, the future depends on it. And I do believe that it's possible. Now, it's very important that we consider the current reality and ensure that no one is left behind in the transformation that we are actually planning. And also, again, we need to embrace technology and innovation. You know, like I said, innovation has many of the answers to our current challenges. And if we don't push that innovation, if we don't make it available to everyone, if we don't make it available quicker, it's going to be extremely difficult. You know, a few years ago, when we were like sort of in Farm to Fork strategy that was adopted in 2020, we're looking at 2030 as a sort of far away objective. In fact, 2030 is tomorrow. So, you know, maybe now we need to look at 2050. But we need to actually make sort of concrete progress, tangible progress between now and 2030 to prepare the ground for the future. And the, you know, the discussions and the strategic discussions that were mentioned by the President of the European Commission during a speech of the State of the Union, you know, having the need, recognizing the need to have strategic conversations on the future of agriculture is basically, for me, a very positive sign. And as I said, it needs to be basically concrete and we need to have actions with that go together with the words. And I believe, again, that innovation will help us out. So we cannot ignore it and we need to all sit at the table and make sure that we factor all solutions into the mix so that we get to the objectives that we have set and for which we have no other choice.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, look, that's a positive note to end on. And also, I think what's come out of this episode is that this idea of the toolbox and needing that choice and having all the options on the table. So it'll be fascinating to see how things pan out. And I'm sure we could make podcasts about each of those individual topics that we only managed to scoot over today. But Olivier de Martos, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode made in partnership with CropLife Europe. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. And remember, if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via your preferred platform. Thank you for listening.